It's Thursday, June 7th, 2018, and you're listening to episode 486 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 47 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad. Is this Fear the Boot?
Yes, this is Fear the Boot.
Oh, okay.
But we do have joining us today what we have just learned is, in fact, the official podcast of Michelob Ultra. We have from Happy Jack, Stu.
Why, hello.
And Kimmy.
Hi there.
Who we're not going to dox, but I've just learned has a very amusing last name.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So, Chad, I feel like we need to be the sponsor of something.
Yes.
Because
anti-stroke medicine or
stroke medicine or one of those medications that treats stroke but causes stroke.
Oh, yeah,
man.
It's just not right that Happy Jacks now has this like multi-million dollar contract right. to advertise Michelob Ultra. And
the kind of money they spend on advertisement.
I think, culture. you know, why I think we haven't gotten the offer is because Anheuser-Busch knows we're bigger.
Yeah.
And they just can't afford us. It's the same reason your corner market doesn't advertise during the Super Bowl. Mm. They were just like, you know what? It's Fear the Boot. We can't afford that. Uh-huh. We're going to have to stick with like major sporting events. And
so Fear the Boot would be like Cheetos or something. We'd be the official gamer podcast of Orange Fingers.
Or Chinese debt holdings or something like that.
What about meth? Meth?
There's lots of meth.
Puppy mills?
Bad decisions involving bitcoins.
Yeah, I was going to say like some cryptocurrency that nobody's ever heard of.
Yes, but we are secretly sitting.
Fear coins.
Fear the coin.
Fear the coin. Fear oh, coins. My God. Yeah, I'll get to work on it now. Our market cap's going to be
boot coins.
Yeah, boot coins.
Boot coins.
Yeah.
We should have a contest. We've not had a contest in a long time. We should have a contest. Like
to name our cryptocurrency scam.
Yes, and like come up with like a 3 or 4 sentence pitch that's like the world's worst idea. I mean a titanically bad idea.
Mine money for the boot. They don't get paid, but they do cryptocurrency mining, and then we get paid.
Oh,
yeah, because we hold the only exchange, and once we get a certain amount of capital put into the exchange, then we disappear.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's not really malware.
We can kickstart it, too, and steal that money. Oh, my God. And then we could start a legal defense fund.
Oh, God damn it.
That charity one is steal that.
Yeah, Indiegogo.
Somebody call that money.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Chad has had a fantastic idea. The problem is I don't know how to execute. Somebody call Palladium.
Right. Dang.
So, all right. There was something we were talking about on the show, and I think it also got mentioned on like Facebook or the forums or I don't know, or somewhere on social media. And Stu said he was interested in talking about this topic. Because he said he did a lot of it during college, and we're not talking about drugs or butt stuff. And so that's what we're going
to
talk about.
That stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about playing yourself in a role-playing game. And to define this, when we say playing yourself, we don't mean having a paper-thin character that's effectively you, because you're not really role-playing. That's not what we mean. We mean you are literally attempting to play your person. Your name is at the top of the character sheets. The stats reflect your vision of yourself or how we're going to do this. And I've got tons of thoughts on this. But Stu, I first want to hear your terrible gaming and college stories. You said you guys did this a lot.
A few times.
Okay. Because for most groups, this is like butt stuff. It's like an experiment. You do, and then don't really come back to it.
Tell us, Dan, about butt stuff and how it is like this. Please expand on this deep, penetrating thought.
I would, but I suddenly smell toast.
Oh, yeah. That's very convenient.
Timely stroke. All right, so, Stu, what brought you guys back this? Like, what kinds of games were you playing? Why were you playing yourselves as opposed to characters?
I think the first time we did it, it was being run by a friend of ours. And this is back actually in college when we're playing in a dorm room on Friday nights. One of our buddies named Brian had this concept for a game he wanted to run. He wouldn't tell us anything about it. He said, but we're all going to sit down. And back then, we were all playing GURPS. He said, we're going to sit down. And we're going to all make ourselves as characters. And he didn't make himself as a character, but a couple of the others of us did. And we sat down.
You guys were all normal guys, and he made himself as Hercules.
Yes. And the interesting thing was, we all had veto power over each other's choices on our character sheets. So it's like, oh, what'd you put your IQ at? Oh, no, your IQ is not that high. You have to drop that by at least one number. Wow. And then they would, yeah, and the others would look at the character sheet and say, or ask us to validate or justify the presence of skills.
How did that go? I mean, was there a lot of hurt feelings? Was there tension?
There wasn't. At a different table,
that's because
table,
none of you had
been...
feeling.
Well, and it sounds like it's a good check and balance, too, because you don't want to be the one called out. So it behooves you to be as accurate as possible.
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
Fair enough.
And that's pretty much what happened. And there was a couple of times when it's like, okay, let's arm wrestle because you say you're 2 points stronger than I am and I think I can take you. And then there are a couple of things like that happened. But for the most part, we spent basically one evening, probably 3 hours or so, making characters and revising them. And then we started the game the next week, and it turned into a zombie apocalypse game, which eventually turned into a post-apocalyptic fantasy game. But it started out as some sort of weird supernatural catastrophe, and we didn't really realize it was going to become a zombie apocalypse when it started. But about that game especially, because that's the only time where I've played myself in a game, you don't want to die. because you don't have a bench.
Right.
There's not multiple yourself. Years. Right. There's not like, it's not like, oh, I'm playing Grog the Barbarian. Next, I'm going to play Glork the Barbarian. No,
you could even say, well, okay, I'm going to play my brother or my sister, in which case people like me are screwed because I'm an only child. So,
yeah. Right. And, I guess you could kind of come up with sort of a riff off yourself, like Stu dies, so now I'm playing Professor von Steubenstein.
Right.
Right. But to me, that was the most interesting thing, is we all suddenly became, and I think maybe this reflects at real life pretty accurately, we became very cowardly.
Yeah.
And it's like, really, there's guns going off, we're going the other direction.
And really, that's how it should be, because in a role-playing game, usually, depending on your big damn hero, somebody starts popping off shots, you are running towards the shots. And right. Because that's where the game is, and that's where the adventure is. But the actual, for real, legit people who are sitting here, unless we've had some sort of like really intense military training and combat experience, we're probably panicking or running away or trying to stay alive in some manner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Instead of looking cool and doing the cool thing.
There was none of that. I mean, a little bit later on there was, but in the beginning part of that game, especially because when we knew nothing of what was going on, we spent all of our time avoiding contact with anyone. At one point, it was just two players. It was me and this guy, Fred. And we basically were able to figure out how to, we found a car, and mercifully, the keys were in it, because neither of us know how to hotwire a car.
Right.
Because if we did, one of the tests he would do, he'd say, oh, you know how to hotwire a car? Well, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And if you could explain it to him.
That is one of the first things I was going to point out about this is, one of the things this allows, and this also causes some problems, which I'm going to come back to, but one of the things this allows is the show me test.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is very Missouri of us, but right. You get the show me test. And somebody says, I can do this, or
better
I know how to do this.
State test or something like that.
Yeah. Or, you know, I can move in this weird fashion, or I've got this skill. Show me. I mean, you can ask the person to go. There's an easy test.
There's a problem with show me, right?
Well, because the GM may not be able to test it.
So, like, take me, for example. I read a lot of books.
Right.
I mean, I read a lot of a large variety of subjects. So we're playing this game, and I'm playing me, and we come to a locked door, and I'm like, okay, I picked the lock. And you're like, bullshit. Show me. Okay, Chad, how do you pick a lock? And I can tell you in detail. I can even draw pictures and describe to you how to pick a lock, about the torque wrench, the tumblers, right. And why that is, and because of the manufacturing differences and variances, and this is how you do it, and this is the techniques, and blah, blah, blah. I've never picked a lock in my life. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea if I can or can't, but I certainly know how.
As a bit of amusing trivia, I actually have a transparent lock,
right,
and a set of lock picks. I'm serious, upstairs. Yeah, sure. I really do have these.
Yeah.
Oh, I do as well.
But your point is well received.
Yeah. I don't have a transparent lock.
But your point is well received, yeah. That you could easily come up with something I can't test.
Right.
Or you have some knowledge or pretend to have some knowledge, mm-hmm. that is so far afield of what I know that I take your word for it, even though you're bluffing. And so I think there is a level of trust because I cannot defer back as easily to a character sheet and say, well, roll this.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're like, look, I know it. I really do. I really can do this. I really have done that. I really do know these three things. It's not like I can say roll against that. If it's you, it's you.
Right.
And so it does take away a certain test that we would otherwise use of, well, I don't know if your character would know this, so just give me a 2d6 and roll high, and we'll call that a success.
So I have a question. As a GM, then, if you're running that game, do you do the show me test, or do you have people roll for it? What did your GM do, Stu?
We used the dice, because our general rule was, if you're doing something that you have skill in and your skill level is decent, if it's a routine thing and there's not a time crunch, you're not under pressure or something like that, you can just do it. But if you're in a hurry or something, like lockpicking, I've got that lockpick set, and I have that test lock. I can open that thing fine. Any other lock in my house is like Fort Knox.
Right. And also, think of it this way. You are trying to open a lock that isn't your clear lock, and 50 yards away is a horde of zombies. Yeah, so, I mean, no pressure, Stu. It's, if you don't do this, we're dead. So, you know, take your time. Do you want me to get you some lemonade? It's all good.
Yeah, I think there is a fair difference between a test of success versus the rather binary test of, is this within your wheelhouse at all?
Right.
You know,
sure.
Do you know how to operate the safety on this model of shotgun? Now, can you do it while you're being chased by a horde of zombies is a different
test. So that's another good question of, we're nerds. Let's just admit that. And I know AB is going to be shocked when they hear it, but we're all nerds. And so what being a nerd means is...
No, this is a football show.
Right.
Anheuser-Busch, keep that money flowing.
Right. Nerds!
If Happy Jacks goes out of business, then we're going to go under antitrust scrutiny.
Right.
So, like,
and then our whole Bootcoin scam is out the door.
So like Microsoft floating Macintosh, we need Happy Jacks to succeed.
So like the
there
nerd...
You go. We're safe.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's us. Safe.
So the nerd thing is, what about, it's like, you're asking, you know, can you pick this lock? It's like a yes, no binary thing, and then we move on. But with nerds, it's like, there is a depth of knowledge, too. So as a GM, you can say, Dan, you like the Second Amendment, and you like your firearms and stuff without getting political or anything. But you could say... Dan, horde of zombies. It's like, okay, well, I take the gun off the cop and I start shooting at the zombies. And it's like, well, do you know how to operate a gun? Well, yeah, and you tell me. Yeah, I do. It's like, oh, okay. Well, okay, this is a Sig Sauer 6.9. I'm making stuff up now. This is a 6.91. It has two safeties, a slide lock, and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. You can't just pull it out and start pulling the trigger. Do you even know how to do it? And you're like, all right, how under the microscope are we getting?
Well, yeah, and I think there certainly can be. There's a saying that Brodor's older brother told me, and I completely agree with it. I think he may have even said it on the show. I don't remember, because we did have him as a guest once.
Was it smart? Then, if it was, then he said it on the show.
Yeah, so it's back there somewhere.
Right.
If you've never heard this before, you just haven't found that episode.
Right.
But the saying was, anyone who knows the word pedant is one. And and I think he's 100% right.
Uh-huh.
And certainly there is a level of pedantry that you can get into here for one who's not a pedant and doesn't know what that means. It means somebody who's very, very nitpicky and microscopic about facts, like what we're talking about, the difference between this model of pistol and another pistol that's otherwise extremely similar. It's being pedantic.
Right.
And so I think there would be a level of extraction where I think it'd be like any other character. You have to get some give and take and say, okay, well, this is in your ballpark. Mm-hmm. You know, all right, maybe you've never seen this particular model of gun before, but you do know how to use firearms, and so we're going to give you a certain role in this versus looking at somebody else at the table who, by their own admission, has said, I've never touched a gun in my life, don't like guns, whatever. And you say, okay, for you, it's a very different role.
Right. Well, and I think that the reason this is a danger, because I think that people listening to this who've never done this kind of game before, and I have a couple of times, might think, well, why would you even, a game master or a player, go to that depth and level of pedantry? And, you know, because you don't do that in normal gaming necessarily. And you just kind of say, okay, that's fine, cool. You got a pistol, you know how to use guns, make your roll, boom, boom, move on. But you have to understand that usually the mindset going into this kind of game is about analyzing the self. It is about understanding how strong you really are or not.
Yeah.
Understanding how smart you are or not. How charismatic you are or not. And then what skills you know and don't know, and to what level, and to what usefulness, if any, that they are. So it's a lot of like inward reflection, which means that people do, even if they don't necessarily want to or think that they are, do kind of tend to go to that level of depth, because your mind is already thinking about that because of the nature of the game.
All right, let's talk about character creation then, because I think that ties into this. Because there is going to be a tendency among players to do one of two things. I think more often than not, people are going to get defensive, or they're going to overestimate their ability. But at the same time, I think there are people that will underestimate themselves.
Right.
Actual Brodor thinks he's a moron.
He is absolutely not.
He's absolutely not a moron. He has some crazy ideas, but he is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a stupid person. I think if I was to hand him a D&D character sheet, he would set his end at like 8 or something, when I think it should be notably higher than that.
Yeah.
And now, so people like that do exist, but I think more often than not, people are going to get defensive. Mm-hmm. And Stu, you said this wasn't an issue because it was just sort of group consensus.
Oh yeah, I had been told by the people at the table that I had to bump my IQ up from like 12 to 13 or 14 or something. I don't remember exactly what the numbers were, but they had said I had estimated my IQ too low. So I'm actually one of those people.
You know, some systems, and I don't know if GURPS does this. Probably it does, because GURPS kind of gets down in the weeds at sometimes.
No,
yeah, I mean, you can't really measure charisma, right? Because it's a soft thing.
Yeah.
But strength, I mean, like, I think in old D&D, at least, it said, if your strength is X, you can lift Y pounds.
Yeah, no, it still does.
If your constitution is X, you can run Y
within
miles.
The core rule books, some of the attributes do get quantified.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look through their splat books or people's overthinking this online,
right,
you can find plenty of ways of trying to quantify it. Or the note that I put here is I described it as level setting. And when I say level setting, I don't mean levels in like first level, second level, third level. I mean, level setting is in like saying, okay, according to this chart, if you can deadlift 250 pounds, this should be your strength. And that's something that's fairly easy to test.
315, jerk.
Okay.
Well, I did it last night.
I will look that up on a chart.
That's my record.
I'm sure it's in a D&D.
I'm very happy for myself.
But you, but
325.
Really?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
You? That's fucking awesome.
Thank you.
I'm impressed. That is awesome.
That lifts my jam.
Nice.
But
that
looks
great.
But all right. But I think the point being that, as you said, some of these soft attributes are much harder to quantify or to agree upon a standard of quantification. Intelligence, for example.
Yeah.
I would argue that academic achievement is not a good measure of intelligence.
Right.
Other people would.
I, as a teacher, would agree with you.
Mm-hmm. In the same way,
you as a deadlifting teacher would agree.
Charisma, how do you even... I think we could agree that some people are charismatic or uncharismatic, but
how do you quantify
that? How do you quantify that? Yeah.
Well, and it's like int. You can say, well, int is... You take an IQ test, one that's, you know, you can even take an online one nowadays, that is roughly accurate and not like what kind of leprechaun you are. But, you know, it's like you get your IQ. It's like your IQ range is this, so your int is this. But what does int mean? Does int mean IQ? What does IQ mean? Does int mean knowledge?
Yeah.
Should I go down to the corner bar and clean up on a trivia contest, and that means I have a high int? Or does it mean that I'm stupid and I just know a lot of stuff? Or am I intelligent and I know a lot of stuff?
So, but I think, nonetheless, if you accept that no standard is perfect, there is some way of level setting attributes in some systems. Now, not all of them will have this, but I think some of them will have something that says this is what the range is. Now, one of the things that I personally tried in the past and would suggest avoiding is do not make the upper number a world record.
Right.
Here's why I say that. That person is such an outlier of genetics and humanity that they are a scale unto themselves. What I mean is I would
Magnus Magnuson, the mountain guy.
So do not go out and look
He's
up.
He's not a 20. He's beyond.
Precisely. Don't go, let's say to take D&D, 3 to 18. Do not go out, look up what the highest deadlift in human history is, divide that by 18, and try to work out everybody's strength. Because
absolutely not.
Do not work out speed based on your running speed versus Usain Bolt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it doesn't work because these people are such outliers.
They break the system.
They break the system. And if they're representable in the system, if you're playing Magnus Magnuson or something like that, then you should have special feats that take you way above an 18 strength.
Well, think about it this way, too. If it's, say, it's a point by system and I want to play Magnus Magnuson or whoever, or Usain Bolt, whoever, it's like, yeah, I got to min-max myself to meet the criteria of what he is. But I don't think either of those guys are dumb. So I got to pick a dump stat. That's fascinating. You know?
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Like the point by system. It's like, okay, where do I prioritize?
Yeah. Okay. And then I hate to tell you this, but there are people out there who are just better.
Yes.
I mean, they're stronger. They're faster. They're smarter.
They're
more charismatic. You know,
all people.
Life is not fair.
Precisely. And I am completely in agreement with you. And this was a debate we had on the show. There was an internal disagreement amongst the show hosts during one of the episodes.
And they may disagree now.
Yeah.
Silence means that they agree with us now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But years ago, and what they said was some of us fall on the side of life's not fair. And if you look at the things that a role-playing game quantifies, which let's say right now is not every facet of a human being, but if you look at the 5 to 10 things they opt to quantify, then not everyone is going to come out equal. Mm-hmm. Now, I fully believe that all people are equal morally, are equal in terms of their value as a human being, that they have this, you know, equal worth, equal rights, et cetera, et cetera. But if I was to take every human being and use the 6 stats from D&D, I do not believe using that standard. All right, let me stress, using that standard, those 6 stats, that everyone would add up to an equal point spread.
Right.
Now, the one thing that I will say in favor of a point buy, assuming you're not playing someone who has just an outlandish outlier stat, where you have to dump stat like that.
If everyone who's playing is within a certain range of what is considered average, it's easy.
Sure. And what it does is I think it does limit the amount of potential emotional fallout because of the fact that you have to balance it all out. So if I say, okay, we're going to play D&D, it's a point buy with this many points, and everyone has to work within that, then I don't have to worry that everyone at the table is going to be in a cruel mood and dump stat me across the board. They have to give it to me somewhere. Or conversely, that I'm going to have this high opinion of myself and I'm straight 18s.
Right.
Another thing that I think is important to decide and should probably be worked out up front, in addition to how are we going to get this? Are we going to level set? Are we going to point buy? What are we going to do to make sure everyone's honest and not getting their feelings hurt? Is to also determine who gets to do what. All right. Meaning, if we do a point buy system, for example, let's say in D&D, do I make me? Does the rest of the table sans me make me? Do I make me and other people get to veto? Do other people make me and I get to veto? What's the order of operations going to be? And I think for me personally, my preferred setup would be it's a point buy. So everyone is basically fairly distributed. Because once again, I don't think there's anyone I know who I'd give a Magnus Magnuson level of outlier stat to. And I think secondly is I would have the rest of the group sans that person make the stats.
I really like what Stu's group did. And I also agree with him. It won't work with every group is that you make your own character, but everybody gets a veto. And there's a sort of social desire, at least I interpreted it as social desire, to not get a veto. So you are motivated to be within your proper ranges,
yeah,
no matter what. And if there is a veto, then, you know, there's discussion. Or like you said, it's like, okay, you say you're that smart, or you say you're stronger than I am by this many points. Okay, put your arm on the table. We're going to arm wrestle this.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I like the idea of like peer pressure keeping you honest. I think that my problem would be like with doing this, me and my friends have very similar skill sets for the most part. Like we were all talking about earlier, like what are the chances of having four people in a conversation and three of them having lockpick sets? Like what do you think the chances of that in our modern society are? As gamers, we tend to have a very similar interest and draws, even when we're completely far apart and don't actually know each other in like face-to-face real life. So how do you avoid like running into that, hey, we all have the same skills. We're a total party of bards. What do we do?
It's great for my group of friends. It's like we're all computer nerds and we work in IT. And then as a game master, I just have the power go out. Everybody's screwed. Everyone is equally screwed.
If you take something like D&D, there is nothing about any of us that really comes all that close to representing those character classes.
Yeah, D&D is a horrible system for this because you play big damn heroes.
Well, even if you say it's a good system, I think what gets interesting about that is you look at the individual and you try to say if they existed.
No, I'm sorry, D&D. Dan, I just don't have an alchemy skill. I don't speak draconic.
But let's say D&D was real.
Right. Let's not. That would be horrible.
Well, depends on what you said.
I mean, we would have angry gods who hate us. We'd have Moander. We'd have trash monsters everywhere.
It depends on the setting. But
We'd have fucking Weemix.
I would be. That's right. I would be a Weemix. I'd come out as a Weemix. But no. All right. So you can, though, do a quick exercise and be like, you know, what is everyone closest to? Mm-hmm. For example, when Wayne actually did this, and I don't know if he posted this publicly or posted privately, but he went down his list of friends that he games with. So the people in Fear of the Booth, the people that he's with on the Sunday game, whatever. And he tried to figure out what character class would each of these people be. And I remember when he got to me, he was originally going with cleric because of the fact that, well, I don't get into it on the show. I am ordained and participate in organized religion and such. And he ended up instead saying, no, Dan is too protective and quite frankly knows a bit too much about violence. And he ended up settling on Dan's a paladin. And
he was too skinny.
Well, but the point is though, that he was able to do that all the way down the line. And his reasoning was fascinating of how he came up with, for example, John has a good memory. He has an analytical mind. He sees the world in a fairly analytical fashion. And as a result,
tinker or gnome sorcerer,
he put him as a wizard. And you know, he was able to kind of go down the whole line of everyone he knew like that. And we'll see, I don't remember how he did all of them, but his math, figuratively, not literally,
right,
but his thought process made a lot of sense. It's a similar exercise with Shadowrun, because forget character class, what race would somebody be if they changed? You know, for example, I'm tall, skinny, fine featured,
dwarf,
exactly. I mean, I'd be an elf, fairly obvious, you know.
Depending on the edition, some elves were short and deep.
Yeah, well, no, I'm talking about Shadowrun. Naked.
Oh, Shadowrun.
Gotcha. So Shadowrun, they're tall, thin, fine featured. I mean, I look like a Shadowrun elf if I was, you know, if this occurred, that's what I would become, assuming I didn't stay human.
Right.
I think it was like 60 to 70% of the population stayed human. So, I mean, let's say you make your roll, right? So you take a D10, you roll it, and on, I don't know, a 9 or a 10 on a D10, you change species. But if you change species, what would you be? You know, and for example, Chad, in your case, you're tall, you're a hairy dude, you're obviously physically fit. The only decision I'd be working on is whether it's orc or troll.
Or gnome.
Or gnome. There's no gnomes in Shadowrun. That's what I'm
They would be a lot more fun if there were.
It would be. But
why are there no gnomes in Shadowrun?
I don't know.
Are they just not badass enough?
I'm sure there are, like in a magic book or something, but I don't know. But all right, my point being that I think there is some logic you can work through. And another place this would pop up is in a system that's not as strongly numeric, because the decisions we're making here are not ones of quantity, they're ones of quality. Fate would be a great example. So it would do the exact same thing,
you know, I would,
because you have to describe yourself conceptually. So I write down one concept and then pass to my left, and Chad, you write down my second concept.
I think fate would be a much better medium for this kind of game. I mean, when the maybe 3-4 times I've played this kind of game in my life, the whole narrative concept of fate and things that were like that just didn't even exist, or were at least totally outside of my group's knowledge. But yeah, the sort of softer, less number driven, more concept driven, more narrative stuff would be a lot better to do. Because especially with fate, I mean, people have catchphrases, people have quirks, people have things they do, people have things that they're known for. And then that's your attributes. That's what defines your character, much mm-hmm. like in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, the interesting thing when we did that game, at one point we were trying to avoid these like supernatural explosions or something. Then we got to the point where we couldn't avoid them anymore, and we got caught in one, and we woke up an undetermined number of millennia later, and a fantasy civilization had evolved, and then we started manifesting who we would be in this world where magic had reawakened.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So like Ash and the Evil Dead sort of thing, where he has a couple of chemistry books in his trunk and he makes gunpowder and stuff.
Right.
Have you seen that? I'll link this to show notes. I remember somebody put together a 1-page printout that it's called like a time traveler's guide or something like mm-hmm. that. And this one page tells you how from scratch to like rebuild critical technologies. Like it's like, okay, with nothing but the things you would find like in the Middle Ages or the Bronze Age. If you do this and this, you've now made a rudimentary magnifying glass. And if you do this and this, you've now begun growing bread mold. And this is which of the bread molds that penicillin is.
Yeah.
And now you begin culturing that you cure diseases. And then if you do this and this, and it's all like real basic of how to work from
make batteries.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. I don't remember everything that was on there, but it's like, here's how to sort of recreate modern society from the things that are available in a D&D level of technology.
It's awesome.
All right, so let's talk about the narrative aspect of this, because there is something that Chad and I have talked about that we're on the same page with, which is, I think, one of the hardest things to plausibly roleplay is the moment of shift.
Right.
So when the zombie apocalypse...
There, we're recording a podcast, everything's chill, zombies or dragons or whatever.
I get a text that says, turn on the news and there's a zombie apocalypse. How would I genuinely react to that?
Yeah.
Or suddenly I walk through a door and instead of being in the bathroom, I'm in Narnia.
Yeah.
That is really hard, I think, for anyone to imagine.
I think that as a game master, one of the things that you really should avoid doing is you get a text that says, turn on the news. Because even if it's dragons and zombies and all that sort of stuff, every single group on the planet will play out the first half hour of this game exactly the same way.
Uh-huh.
Disbelief. I turn on the news, it's got to be a War of the Worlds style hoax. And it's not real until you actually are in front of a zombie or a dragon or something like that.
I think
like
it would go a different direction, which is, well, of course, I board up the windows.
immediately. Yeah. I think I've been gaming too long. Like, when the zombie apocalypse happens, like, I have my plan in place.
So you guys are telling me that in the 1930s, was it Orson Welles would have come on the radio, told you that Martians were attacking, and you would have been blasting water towers with shotguns? Would you have been those people?
Yeah,
I would have been the person like in the car packing my stuff and going like to the hills.
Well, yes. Speaking,
at least you could pass that off as I was camping, guys. No, really.
No, here's the thing: it's, would people do that? Would I actually be the guy shooting water towers?
I would be,
and then I'd find out there was an alien invasion. These are unrelated facts.
Right, right.
I'd just be out there shooting water towers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do have to
give some background, though, because like my family is, like some of my family is the family that has the hideaway up in the hills. And like when Y2K was happening, like my dad was super pissed because I was down at a party and he was like up there waiting for the end of the world. I have a predisposition to believe that this shit and be prepared.
Do you have a bug out bag ready?
I do. I actually have a bug out bag.
Yes, he does.
You should have a bug out
bag. For disaster preparedness.
Yes, yeah. Everyone should have one.
Zombie apocalypse, earthquake.
It's for everything.
You know, one of the issues when I've played these types of scenarios, hasn't happened every time, But when you don't do the you are in Narnia thing, I mean, or you are John Carter of Mars and you're on Mars and it's this, but was it the Barsoom or whatever the hell the Barsoom, or the city is called and whatnot. If it's not that, if it's like zombies attack or there's dragons in the sky or Martians are coming and people are trying, again, we talk about how people go deep because you're in that mode. And so you're trying to really think about what you would really do, because that's the point of the exercise. People tend to do what they would really do, which is, where is my family?
Yeah.
Are my loved ones safe? Which is great. I mean, that's what you should think, except that makes a dumb game, because I don't know about you, but all of my friends' families don't live on a compound
I think
so that
closest,
means everyone's going every way.
I can come to a real event like that occurred within my lifetime would be 9/11. Mm-hmm. Because when 9/11 went down, obviously bad things happened. But there was a lot of confusion and there was a lot of speculation that much worse things were happening. There were all these scattered reports about explosions in other cities and police responding to things and and other planes that might be missing. And there was all of this confusion that made it seem like the world was coming apart. And here's what I did. I could real response to what at the time in the moment seemed like an implausible end of civilization scenario. And it was only later, I mean, it was tragic, don't get me wrong, but compared to what they thought, it turned out to be much more, I don't want to say okay, because it wasn't okay, but it was not nearly as bad as they thought it was.
Well, yeah, the scale and of it was
the
not
scale of it,
a
yeah.
large of an
not
attack.
Not every single
was.
City was getting attacked. Not every plane
precisely.
Was falling.
This was right. not this was right. not the end of the world.
Yeah.
This
right.
was
and
not
there were a lot of people, some of whom I'm related to, who really did think it was. Like they were 100% convinced.
At the time, I had no idea. And so let me tell you what I did.
You shot water towers. Because it was Thursday, why not?
It was I was already out there shooting water towers, and somebody told me about a terrorist attack. And
so you run out of meth for the day.
Right.
Yeah, so I went and did a meth run. No, all right. So what I did was I was in my car. I had just left my apartment, was going to work. A friend of mine called me and said, hey, you need to turn on the news. Some really whacked out stuff is going down. I did. And what I did was I pulled over in a parking lot, immediately turned the car around. I went back home. I sat down on the couch in my apartment, turned on the news. And I, because I had no idea what was going on, I put a loaded pistol on the couch cushion next to me. That was all I did. Mm-hmm. You know, I did not go start boarding up my windows. I didn't grab my bug out bag and run for the hills. I didn't have some grand plan. It was like, I don't know how to process this.
Right.
And so it's like, I'm prepared to protect myself. I think I sent text messages to at least friends. I don't think my family was tech forward enough to have cell phones.
Yeah.
But I sent text messages to a couple of my friends to say, hey, what are you guys, you know, up to? Is everybody okay? I might have made a phone call or two to family members. But other than that, it was just, it was wait and see. Mm-hmm. And I think, Chad, in some way, what you described is the game you didn't want.
Yeah.
Of the disbelief and wait and see and whatever. It's a boring game, but it actually is probably closer to reality.
Yeah, and it is how people should react.
Yeah.
But like I said, unless you're playing with your mom and your dad and your wife and your kid, and you start the game where everyone's playing themselves and you're all sitting around a table playing a game with your mom and your dad and your wife and your kid, then, yeah, I mean, people want to make sure their loved ones are okay. So I think it's a challenge as a game master to keep everyone together and to keep them focused on the plot, unless your plot is, let's do the tour of the city you live in, rounding up your family, which is a valid plot.
Right.
Yeah. It's not necessarily one that I would want to run. And maybe I think one of the solutions to that is to say, okay, guys, we're going to bend reality a little bit. We're going to go off the rails of what your characters would do. Let's just assume before we start the game that something's going to happen. Your folks are okay.
Yeah.
You get a text message. You know they're okay. And you have to deal with it.
Yeah, or don't tell that part of the story.
Yeah.
You walk into a doorway. Suddenly you're Narnia. Something walks up to you. A centaur walks up to you and says hello.
And you're like, hey.
4 weeks later.
Get it? It's a pun. Because he's a centaur. Hey.
Yeah, I understand.
Thanks for explaining, though. That makes the jokes funnier.
It does. It's like dissecting a frog. You understand how it works, but both the joke and the frog are dead.
Well, all I can say is...
that was a Mark Twain quote, but I'd love to take credit for it.
Chad, all I can say is I'm putting the I, the me, and the we back into Waymick.
But, I think that's a really great point about the GM, like, having to set expectations. Because especially, too, in situations like the zombie apocalypse, you have to figure out, like, how dark are you going? You know, if you are going super dark and realistic with this, do you want to involve family? Because then there's dark things happening to people's family. And this came up earlier when Stu was talking about how people don't want to get hurt in the game when they're playing themselves. I think that that can really be triggered by suddenly involving people's loved ones, too.
Oh, that could be horribly, that's a horribly dangerous thing to do. Especially if they have, especially if they have kids. And then it's
I mean, it's like, okay, magic meteor strikes, and we live in St. Louis, so St. Louis is wiped out, but I'm with Dan here, and we're kind of semi on the edge in the county of it. Well, okay, so it sinks in, you know, it's like, hey, we're processing, and we're dealing with playing this game, and then suddenly it starts sinking in that almost all of Dan's family's dead.
Yeah.
My wife and child are dead.
Yeah.
I mean...
like, nobody suddenly wants to play that game.
Yeah, suddenly I don't want to play it. Suddenly my character doesn't want to play this game anymore, and I don't want to play this game anymore.
Right.
It's just too much of a drag.
Do you pull the wife from the road and you just walk out into the nightmare to die?
To die, because you can't take it. Because,
you can't take it. Or do you just eat a bullet? I mean, and it's a very... why I think transposing yourself to another reality, I think maybe...
the Narnia game.
The Narnia game, or you fall through Portal and wake up in D&D, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or you're playing yourself in Shadowrun, but we're just going to write certain family out of the picture. Right. Or they're there, but they're fine.
Yeah.
We're not going to deal with them. You know, your parents, your wife, your kids, your husband, whatever. They're alive, they're fine. Maybe their contacts are part of backstory. But we're really just not going to involve them in the game.
You could take an opposite track, too, where you involve the wife, the kids, the parents, that sort of thing. And whatever the great evil is, if there's an intelligence behind it, they're captured. Uh-huh. You get information that, you know, it's like you hand wave. Yeah, everybody goes off to check on your loved ones. And then it's 2 days later and you kind of guys get back together. It's like they were gone. Where are they gone? And here are the clues, and they've been captured, and you have to go rescue your family.
Yeah.
Or it's like the Red Dawn scenario, and they're all in the concentration camp.
Right.
Watching the propaganda movies.
Right. Or the Red Dawn thing, too, where they're in the town, they're the normal people of the town, and you are doing your Red Dawn Wolverines thing, but if you get caught, they're dead.
Yeah.
You can't let it be known it's you who are the Wolverines, and that's... uh-huh. I mean, you want to talk about a risk-averse game then? That would be tense and interesting there.
Yeah. Now, would it be...
absolutely.
I mean, if you wanted to have a dark kind of setting that was like grim and gritty, I think you could also do the thing where you say, okay, we're going to start after, okay, your families have been wiped out. Yeah. So there's not that...
it's been a couple of years.
As emotional as that is, if they're starting that before the game and it puts it in that game world where it's like they don't have to emotionally deal with it as they play...
yeah.
That also is a way, I think, to kind of avoid that kind of the trope of you have to save your family, man, by keeping that dark feel.
All the games I've played like this, again, like I said, I played like 3, 4, 5, something like that. They always start the same way. They don't have to, but it's just the ones I played is, you know, we all make our characters and we're all sitting around a table and the game starts of we are in the same house in game, sitting around the same table in game. And then we go from there. Who says that you have to start like that? Why can't you start 5 years after the whatever happened happened? And the game can ask, like, okay, this is what happened. This is what went on. This is what was going on. It's 5 years later. What have you guys been doing in the meantime?
Yeah, do a time jump. Yeah. Or if you don't want to do a time jump, Chad, going back to Wolverine's things, there are other games that encourage you to keep it on the down low.
Yeah.
Dresden's one of them.
Right.
You don't do magical stuff in front of the mundanes or whatever their terms are for this.
Yeah, to me, that's a more interesting setting just because you also, especially we were talking about the pros and cons of a point buy system earlier, that also gives you, even though you're still basing it on your basic ability, that also gives you some time to grow. Because, you know, 5 years into the zombie apocalypse, I'm going to have a much different skill set than I do currently. You know, there's going to be things that I've gotten better at and things I've probably, you know, slacked off on and gotten worse at. So I think that also gives there a little bit of wiggle room for some creativity and fun, too.
Yeah, yeah, because that gets back to your earlier point of, you know, you have a group of friends and most people have friends who share similar interests. So you have five people sitting around a table who all know how to pick locks, but not one of them knows how to stop or treat a stab wound. Well, 5 years later, maybe a couple of people have kind of dropped the lock picking thing and have more gone to let's do some wound care.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. Once again, I want to thank Stu and Kimmy from the Happy Jacks RPG podcast for joining us.
We want to thank the fine people at Anheuser-Busch for sponsoring Happy Jacks.
Yeah, and you can find a link to Happy Jacks in the show notes, or if you don't want to look, it is happyjacks.org. It's Jacks plural, happyjacks.org.
Is there a Happy Jack RPG, like, you know, counter podcast?
I don't. Oh, there should be.
Oh, I think there's going to be tonight.
Yeah.
And they're going to be selling Bootcoin.
But I'll put a link to their show in the show notes. And then also, I and probably one other host will be joining them on their show as guests.
Ew. Here in the very... Now, come on, Dan. We got standards here.
You do not.
That's so true.
The things we do.
Our presence is evidence to the contrary.
Fair.
The things we do for our Kickstarters.
Right.
So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week of great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth, copyright 2018. Listeners are free to use this episode in any non-commercial endeavor so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the RPG Academy network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at therpgacademy.com/network.